And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery. There's a winter storm watch in effect at 9 tonight. The National Weather Service is warning that up to 7 inches of snow are possible, but it's more likely to be in the 3 to 5 inch range. Still, that will be the first considerable snowfall for the capital city this season. The main concern for the storm is the morning commute tomorrow. If it warms up after snowing all night, the snow could be heavy and wet, and we all know how hard that is to shovel and plow. So give yourself some extra time tomorrow morning. It's currently 31 degrees and mostly cloudy at the Juneau International Airport. Juneau's three state legislators will keep their seats for another term. Senator Jesse Keel, Representative Andy Story ran unopposed for re-election. Both candidates are Democrats. Representative Sarah Hannan won another term in the Alaska House of Representatives with 78% of the overall vote. She ran against undeclared candidate Daryl Harmon. Hannan is a Democrat. She will represent House District 4, which contains parts of Juneau, Haines, Skagway, Kluckwan, Gustavus. All three of Juneau's legislators first took office in 2019 following the 2018 election. Their new terms will begin in January. The U.S. Supreme Court heard a case today that represents a major challenge to the Indian Child Welfare Act. ICWA, as it's known, is a federal law that allows tribes to make adoption decisions for Native children to keep them connected to their culture and to keep Native families intact. The plaintiffs taking their cases to the Supreme Court say that it's unconstitutional and it's racial discrimination. KTVO's community reporting fellow Chen Chen has been following the case and reported on what ICWA means to Alaska, where 55% of children in state custody are Native. She talked to Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove.
Yeah, so for my second story on ICWA, I interviewed a tribal court judge, and it seems that from what I've spoken to her about, perhaps compared to other states that have better implementation of ICWA, Alaska just hasn't really been putting in a lot of resources to combat those figures. Not to say that there aren't obviously many people in the system who are working to change things, but I think it's especially tough in Alaska because of shortages in staff and shortages in resources.
Yeah, let's break that down just a little bit more too, because there's a preference to keep kids that are in a, you know, maybe a bad situation or at least a perceived bad situation by, you know, Office of Children's Services workers or whatever. There's a preference that if they are going to be removed from a home for their own protection, that they be then placed with another Native family or even somebody within the same family, right?
One of the main things that ICWA tries to do is to help reunite families. So when kids are put into foster care, there's resources also that should be put in for the parents and for the families, like grandparents, to be able to take care of the child and improve their abilities as a parent and get help for the different mental and physical things that they need help for.
You did speak with somebody who's a former adoptee, right? And what did she have to say about this?
Yeah, I spoke to a former adoptee who was adopted in the year that ICWA was passed in 1978. So I think that was a very interesting perspective from someone. Jennifer Quinto was adopted from an Athabascan family into a multicultural Tlingit household in Juneau.
For me and my adoption, it was a big gamble. That law wasn't in place, and I could have very easily been placed with another family. And how many children are there that didn't have that protection? And like I said, there were so many adoptees that I met that I could feel the intensity of the hurt and the anger. And all of that came from the fact that they were, you know, being raised with families that just didn't understand the complexities.
So she seems to be very much in favor of ICWA, at least the intentions of ICWA, right?
Yeah. So ICWA has a lot of different actual ways it's implemented in each state. But I think that from speaking to Jennifer, it seems like no matter what ICWA actually looks like in each state, just having that exist is already saying, you know, to her, like, you matter, adoptees, like, you matter, and your identity matters.
We're here to talk about a very particular lawsuit that you've been following, a court case. Tell me about that. Who's the plaintiff there? Who's the defendant? What is the change that they're seeking?
The U.S. Supreme Court will hear a case called Holland v. Brackeen. And the case is trying to say that the plaintiffs, including Brackeen and various other states and different parents who are trying to adopt Native children, they're all kind of getting at how they think that ICWA is not constitutional because it gives preference to Native families and tribes for Native children over all other kinds of people. And in the lawsuit, they classify that as racial discrimination and violating the Equal Protection Clause. And what's happening in the Brackeen case is that these parents from Texas who are white adopted a child who was from a tribe while they were fostering him. And then they got into a lawsuit because they wanted to adopt that kid's brother. And the problem was the tribe didn't want to let that child be adopted out of the tribe, and that child's aunt was very willing and wanted to adopt the kid. And in the end, the Brackeens did get both children, but were still not happy with the terms of that lawsuit.
So the U.S. Supreme Court's about to hear this case, and I guess a decision would be, you know, somewhere down the road from that, but are the people that you're talking to, do they have guesses about how the Supreme Court might rule on this?
So the two people that I mainly spoke to both don't think it's going to be overturned because it's almost too far out of reality for a lot of Alaska Natives for ICWA to be overturned. And I think the other thing is that from other articles I've read about ICWA from various perspectives outside of Alaska, it also seems that ICWA would have very far-reaching implications if it's overturned, because that is saying that tribal sovereignty is just not a thing. Because if they rule that being Alaska Native or being Native American is a racial classification rather than a political classification, that's a direct threat to tribal sovereignty.
That was KTOO's reporting fellow Chen Chen speaking with Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove. Find her stories about ICWA at ktoo.org. Incumbent Republican Mike Dunleavy is leading in Alaska's governor race, capturing just over half of first-place votes tallied so far. Votes from nearly all polling precincts were counted by early this morning. Dunleavy led with 52% of first-place votes, followed by Democrat Les Guerra with about 23% and Independent Bill Walker with about 20%. Republican Charlie Pierce is trailing with less than 5% of the vote. Dunleavy was smiling as he walked into a party for his supporters at the Marriott Hotel in downtown Anchorage.
We're the only red state left on the entire West Coast because of you people!
If Dunleavy's share of the vote remains over 50% as more ballots are counted, he will win a second term as governor outright with no need for ranked choice vote tabulations. Otherwise, election officials will tabulate ranked votes on November 23rd. Earlier in the night, Guerin noted that absentee votes to be counted later in the process are less likely to favor Dunleavy.
It seems like Democrats vote more absentee, Republicans vote more in person. I don't blame either. We're just a divided country right now. I hope we can end that too and bring people together.
Guerin and Walker, the two more progressive candidates in the race, have acknowledged that since the primary, a path to victory for either of them would require each other's second place votes. On election night, Walker said his campaign left it all on the field.
We did it all. We went everywhere. We talked to everyone. We did all the things you're supposed to do. And mostly we listened to Alaskans. So that was really the special part.
Guerin and Walker have been critical throughout the campaign of Dunleavy's record in office. Early results show incumbent Lisa Murkowski trailing challenger and fellow Republican Kelly Shibaka in the election for U.S. Senate. And in the U.S. House race, Democrat Mary Piltola is far ahead of her Republican rivals Sarah Palin and Nick Begich. But that's only after the first place votes counted on Election Day. With 70% of precincts reporting, Shibaka has about 44% of the vote to Murkowski's 43%. At an election party Tuesday night, Shibaka said she's feeling hopeful and confident, but acknowledged the race was not over. And that's because the election won't be decided until second rankings are tallied on November 23rd. Murkowski told her fans at a gathering in downtown Anchorage not to worry.
As we're looking to the lay of the land and what is still out there to be counted, we feel very strongly about how they're going to move and where they're going to move us to.
Democrat Pat Chesbrough was in third with nearly 10% of the vote, and the Senate election might come down to who Chesbrough's first-choice voters selected as their favorite, their second favorite. It's a similar story in this election for Alaska's U.S. lone seat in the U.S. House. Piltola had about 47% of the vote, Sarah Palin is in second place with roughly 27%, and Nick Begich is in third with 24%. Regardless of the outcome of Tuesday's election, Peltola will keep the seat until January 3rd when the next congressional term starts. This is KTOO.